Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about issues of the day from a biblical perspective, as well as highlights from interviews, conferences, and events. Here's Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. For this edition, highlights from Dr. Mark Zumhagen's presentation during the Illinois Family Institute's COVID-Con Forum hosted by Families of Faith Church in Shanahan. Dr. Zumhagen is a family medicine physician with nearly four decades of experience in the medical field. In 2009, he co-founded Fearfully and Wonderfully Made, a holistic and nutritionally based center located in Orland Park, where he currently practices. In this segment, Dr. Zumhagen discusses vaccine mandates and the risk in treating well people.
When we went through COVID, it was just sort of a disorienting experience. It was very frustrating. For the first time, I had pharmacists tell me I couldn't phone in certain medications, and never had that happen before in 38 years of practice. It really made me go sort of deep and try to figure out what is going on, why is this happening? So what I'm going to try to do is do what many doctors did, and many patients as well after COVID, is sort of take a step back and look at the whole picture, the whole situation of even vaccination in general, and just try to figure out what is going on here. So my title here is The System with No Breaks, Accelerating to Disaster, A View from 10,000 Feet. So I think that's the best way to get a perspective on things, is sort of step back and take a look from a higher level. What I'm going to try to do here is present what it means to be not so much against vaccines, but against the system currently being used to deliver them. I think that's a more productive conversation. And I think there is a difference, because I think the great failures we've seen is all due in a great part to the way the system has been set up. So I'm going to even look at a timeline of where things have gone wrong. And so the talk I'm giving is going to talk about all the green lights. We're looking for a red light, like what's going to help the system stabilize or stop or analyze itself. And we don't see any red lights, and that's the problem. Everything's green. There's going to be six areas that we're looking at that where the red lights have essentially turned green. The first is informed consent. Then we have lawsuits. We have regulations, education, science, and moral constraints. All of these have been removed. The timeline basically stretches from 1910 to 1996, where we have removed all these constraints. We're going to look at them individually. We're starting with informed consent. Informed consent is sort of a basic tenet of medicine. You're not supposed to have to take a medicine until you've been told that it's going to be good for you. And you're supposed to participate in that decision. And it was especially emphasized with the Nuremberg Code after World War II, because it was considered a great violation in Germany with the Nazi war crimes, where informed consent had been violated. People were experimented on without their consent. I like this quote from Aaron Seary. I'm going to read it for you. Mandates are tools of bullies, criminals, and dictators. If a patient refuses a medical product after being conveyed of its benefits and risks, then that is called informed consent. They were informed and did not consent. Mandating over this objection is immoral and illiberal. Mandates are only necessary when one cannot convince on the merits, when safety and efficacy are questionable. Where does this apply to vaccines? Well, if vaccines are truly doing us a great service, we should all be running to get them. And if we decide maybe they're not, we should have the choice not to. And I will tell you this, I think this is one area that I want us to really realize, that it's easy to get used to something and think it's normal. We've all grown up with the idea like, oh yeah, we have to get our kids vaccinated to go to school. It's just part of our normal life. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. There shouldn't be any medical product you ever take that should be mandated upon you. And it's really an insult to your intelligence. It's like telling you, yeah, you're too stupid to realize how important this is, so we're just going to make you do it. But I will tell you this, Aaron Seery is an amazing man. He's chief attorney for the Informed Consent Action Network. It's a great resource. I believe he's correct. True, we can sort of get around the informed consent violation, the mandates, with religious belief exemptions, but technically we shouldn't have to be doing that. So let's look at when vaccine mandates took place. First state was Massachusetts, 1855, and that was only for the smallpox vaccine because that's all there was. Then we have Jacobson versus Massachusetts. It's a big case that's usually mentioned, Supreme Court mandated, not for the person who was a Lutheran pastor to get the vaccine, he just had to pay a fine. In 1963, we had 20 states mandating childhood vaccines. 1977, we got to 90%. It was called the Childhood Immunization Initiative. And then by 1980, all 50 states had vaccine mandates requiring children get vaccinated before they enter school. Why were they mandated? Supposedly, vaccines have saved millions of lives. Well, let's look at history. Here's an example with measles. The death rate, this is from 1900 to 1960, it's the CDC website. The death rate went from, at the highest, maybe 15 per 100,000, down to 1 per 100,000 between 1900 and 1960. The vaccine appeared in 1963. So what was going on? We'll find out. Smallpox death versus vaccination death in England and Wales, most of the time, the vaccination deaths exceeded the smallpox deaths. When smallpox vaccine was mandated in Massachusetts, initially there's no change, then there's a big spike, and then sort of fizzles down. It's hard to tell what the vaccine did or didn't do. In England and Wales, measles, scarlet fever, whooping cough, diphtheria, smallpox. We never did have a vaccine for scarlet fever. The other diseases we did develop vaccines for, but it was all much later when the disease curves had all trended down to close to zero. Or even if we did, there's a diphtheria vaccine that comes in 1922, but the curve's going down already, and it continues to go down. So we can't really tell if the vaccine had any effect at all, because all the diseases, including scarlet fever, continued to go down. The U.S. doing the same thing, same diseases, same results. Vaccines come in late in the game, the death rate has already markedly diminished. Again, the death rate was very low. Measles has the highest death rate before the vaccine. That was 400 deaths total in the country. It's one in 500,000, which is a low number. Nobody wants to see 400 people die. But as with COVID, you're looking at people who had comorbidities. It's not typical for people to die of measles, but if you're already sick and you have a comorbidity, another disease, then it's possible. It's interesting that as soon as the vaccine came into play, now we're all deadly afraid of measles because, as we'll see later, fear is the main weapon being used to manipulate the masses. Here's a question that we have to ask. Are we trading acute illness protection for chronic lifelong illness? When we have few vaccines, 11 in 1986, we have a 12.8% rate of chronic illness. When we have 53 vaccines in 2017, we have a 54% rate of chronic childhood illness. The sad truth is the studies have not been done to show us what's going on there. So I'm not telling you the vaccines cause chronic disease, but I am saying it needs to be investigated. I still remember my first case of autism that I saw in 1992. And the crazy thing was, I didn't know what autism was. The patients told me they thought their child was autistic. You know why I didn't know what it was? Well, it's possible I missed the class in medical school. I don't believe so, because there were a lot of classes and there was a lot of repetitive information. Nobody talked about autism when I went to medical school. That would be in the 80s. Because there wasn't any. It was one in 5,000. We have a 4,450% increase as we go through 2009. In 2009, the rate was 1 in 110. Current rate is 1 out of 36. So that rate continues to climb unabated. There is an environmental cause. We don't get a genetic disease that shoots up like that. So we have to figure out, is it the air? Is it the water? Is it the food? What is it? It's something that the children are being exposed to. One thing I think we have to think of as Christians, I want you to think of putting the mindset of a Christian. We have to think creationally. God created our bodies. So that means there is risk to treating well people with medication. There just is. There will be. And it's a question of, like, are we measuring that risk? And is it possible that you're making a well person sick by treating them, as opposed to just leaving them in their well state? We have to ask that question. It's our first light that turned from red to green. We have eliminated informed consent. We have mandated vaccines. We no longer have the ability to say no.
Dr. Mark Zumhagen, during the Illinois Family Institute's COVID-Con Forum, hosted by Families of Faith Church in Shanahan. Now, in this next segment of Spotlight, he'll discuss the vaccination system.
Hail and well met. My name is Jenna.
I'm Kenna Rose.
And I'm Eliana.
We are three of the five hosts of the Self-Evident podcast, a platform dedicated to speaking truths that were once self-evident, and our hope is that we do so in love.
We have seen a distinct lack of platforms talking about worldview issues and theology and just a lot of what's going on in the world from a perspective of speaking truth, but doing it in such a way that is loving. And so our hope is to be able to talk about these in such a way that
our peers can access it.
Right, absolutely. As well as interviewing a variety of people such as pastors, actors, theologians, directors, even some of our friends to glean wisdom from their own walks of life.
Yeah, so if you are in the Generation Z category, even if you're above that, or impressively, even if you're below that and you're listening to podcasts, good on you. We encourage you to stop by our platform at selfevidentpodcast.com.
Self-evident, speaking truths that were once self-evident and doing so in love.
This is an Illinois Family Institute, illinoisfamily.org update. Opposition is mounting against the Homeschool Act.
It should be the Anti-Homeschool Act.
Opponents warn that if the legislation becomes law, it will impose oppressive regulations on home education and brick-and-mortar private schools in Illinois. And Kirk Smith with Illinois Christian Home Educators dismisses the argument that the bill will combat truancy and educational neglect, noting there are statutes already in place to deal with those problems.
You're under suspicion until proven innocent. Puts everybody into one big category rather than dealing with the ones who are the problem.
Call. Ask your state lawmakers to vote no on the Anti-Education Choice Homeschool Act. For names and phone numbers, click Officials Finder on the IllinoisFamily.org homepage. IllinoisFamily.org.
With a one-minute look at culture from a Christian worldview, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. According to English teacher Tim Donahue, academic inflation is as real as economic inflation. In the 1960s, about 15% of grades given at colleges were an A. In 2017, it was nearly 50%. And meanwhile, SAT scores fell by 20 points, and by 2023, ACT scores reached the worst in three decades. This, Donahue says, could explain why, quote, 65% of Americans feel they're smarter than average. The purpose of grades is to provide feedback. It's a way humans learn and grow. But in a world in which it is assumed that truth is found within, the purpose of grades becomes reduced down to just affirmation for doing work, not measuring what's been learned. According to Donahue, if everyone gets an A, then no one gets an A. So teachers should consider giving a B+, but that won't do any good unless students are taught first that truth exists outside of themselves, that it can be found, and that it should be pursued over and above affirmation and self-expression. I'm John Stone Street.
Thanks for joining Illinois Family Spotlight. We're highlighting Dr. Mark Zumhagen's presentation during the Illinois Family Institute's COVID-Con Forum, hosted by Families of Faith Church in Shanahan. In this segment, Dr. Zumhagen discusses the power that big pharmaceutical companies are wielding in America.
Most of you are familiar with the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. I will be abbreviating it NCVIA, 1986. Why did that happen? Because the vaccine companies had virtually gone out of business. We were down to three companies providing vaccines, and they were about to go out of business. They were mostly getting sued related to the DPT vaccine. It was causing seizures, encephalopathy, brain damage, death. And it was happening on a large enough scale that they were being sued and they couldn't stay in business. So they went to the Reagan administration and gave their case and said, you know, if you don't help us out with this, all the vaccines are going to go away because we're not going to make them. And guess what? All the diseases are going to come back. They capitulated to their demands, and as a result, pharmaceutical companies cannot be sued. The government uses our taxpayer money to defend in a vaccine court when we bring our cases forward. They use our money against us. Not such a great idea. You must prove causation, and we've already paid out $4.5 billion for vaccine damage. Our first vaccine, 1796, smallpox, Edward Jenner. There were some vaccines produced in the 1800s by Pasteur, but they weren't widely used. The first vaccine that was widely used, we started with pertussis in 1914. Then we had diphtheria, tetanus, DPT. We have the polio vaccine, 1958. So basically, we have MMR, DPT, and polio in the 80s, or in the early 80s. And then we have the NCVIA, the law passed. And then we get Hib, second MMR, hepatitis B at birth, varicella, rotavirus, influenza, Prevnar 7, Gardasil, meningitis, and finally COVID at 6 months. There's one other bubble, the aluminum adjuvants. So the question is, we saw a tremendous uptick right around 1986, just slightly before that. It sort of makes you wonder if that law and the change in the way we were administering vaccines might have contributed. But if that wasn't enough of a possibility, think of this. That aluminum adjuvant, that's 1932. That's a component that makes the vaccines more effective, also makes them more toxic. It's an unavoidable ingredient at this point that's used in most of the killed vaccines. It was first introduced into the vaccines in 1932. The first case of autism was diagnosed in 1938. There was a series of 11 children. The leading psychiatrist in the country was Leo Kanner, Johns Hopkins Hospital. He said, this is a new illness. I've never seen it before. And they were trying to figure out what in the world is causing it. The vaccine schedule, if we line it up, according to the amount of doses being given, 1986, 2023, we can intersperse the 86 vaccines in with the 2023. It's an overwhelming change. So we glossed another red light. We're hurtling downward the tracks because here's the thing about lawsuits. Lawsuits, any product in the United States is subject to a potential lawsuit. And lawyers will tell you lawsuits are the best motivator for the manufacturer to make a safer product. If you lose the ability to be sued, I mean, nobody loves lawsuits, but companies think about lawsuits in the back of their mind as they're making their product. And it leads them to make a safer product, or if they get sued, find a way to, you know, revise the product so that it becomes safe. But there is no incentive to the vaccine industry to make a safer product from lawsuits. Regulators. I don't know about you, but these letters always confused me. FDA, CDC, NIH, like, what are these guys all about? So I'm going to try to make it really simple for you. They're all under the umbrella of the Health and Human Services Organization. And here's the way it works. NIH researches, National Institute of Health. They're in charge of the research for any medical product. The FDA is responsible for licensing the medical product so that it can be put out to the public. CDC is in charge of recommending the product. You don't have to follow the recommendation, but most of the medical establishment does. And the HRSA is just designed to improve the access to the products. The problem is, in 1992, they changed the laws because originally these organizations could take no money from the pharmaceutical industry. But in 1992, that all changed. And they began to take millions of dollars from the very companies that they were regulating. That definitely biases your ability to regulate when you're being paid by the people you're regulating. There's many ways in which this causes a problem. The people that are sitting on the committees to approve the products have ties to the pharmaceutical industry, and they get rewarded if they've done a good job with their job as a government official. When they leave the government, they often go into the industry and are given prominent executive positions in pharmaceutical industry. This has happened time and time and time and time again. So the problem is the people that are responsible for promoting the vaccines are also defending the vaccines against harm. In other areas, we separate things. The Department of Transportation is separate from the National Transportation Safety Board. The Department of Energy is separate from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So as complex as these regulatory bodies get, we don't really have any other examples where the same body is both promoting and regulating simultaneously. They are no longer an unbiased party. 1992 is the year that this all happened. So far we've hit a light in 77, now 86, now 92. Well, it still gets worse. Education, I'm going to speak mostly about education to the populace. We are now one of only two countries that allow the pharmaceutical companies to advertise their product directly to the public. There's no naysayers, there's no red light. And the reason we don't have a red light is because pharmacy is now contributing to the media. This started in 1987, if I remember my dates correctly, or maybe 1984, and then they got television rights in 1997. And so both of those dates are significant for the advertising. And what does it mean? Hey, does it mean you just have to watch a couple pharmaceutical ads? Oh, you could just turn those off, right? You don't have to listen to that brainwashing. But it's much worse than that. Because what it means is, if there's a drama show that has a medical theme on it, there's some scenario portrayed that doesn't meet what the pharmaceutical companies wish to portray, they'll pull their ads. So you cannot have any drama show that has a negative portrayal of the pharmaceutical industry. But it's even worse than that. Because, guess what? If you have a news show that might say something against the pharmaceutical companies, they'll pull their ads for that too. And Big Pharma is the biggest contributor for advertising for the media. Science. One of the problems is, this goes all the way back to 1910 and 1914. There's something called the Flexner Report, run by Rockefeller. He started us on this path of a pharmaceutically based medical industry, kicked out the chiropractors, kicked out anybody that was not doing pharmaceutical medicine. So in a way, we got on this road a long time ago. But worst thing that we're seeing today is the kind of trials that are done to examine vaccines. Clinical trials, which are mean, those are the trials that are done before the vaccine is licensed. It's your only opportunity to show, or your primary opportunity, let's put it that way, to show a cause and effect relationship between vaccine and a potential complication. So the clinical trials are abominable, post-marketing surveillance also non-existent, and we have flawed scientific thinking. So, as I mentioned, you only get one chance, really, with these placebo-controlled trials at the beginning, before the product's licensed, to show what the problems are. And here's an example. When the MMR vaccine was licensed, there's no control. It was reviewed for 40 days, and there were 834 children used in the trial. That's not too impressive. Basically, when you don't use a placebo control, it's a meaningless study. What would be an appropriate placebo? Saline injection. There has virtually never been a vaccine trial that uses a valid placebo. No placebo, polio, no placebo, DVT, used a different vaccine to test it. The PCV13 used the PCV7. So what does that mean? That means if you're seeing a problem Well, let's say 13 people died when you tested the vaccine. Well, you look at your placebo. Well, 13 people died there too. I guess it must be okay. But you're not comparing against an inert substance. You're comparing against a similar vaccine that has the same ingredients, the aluminum, the polysorbate 80. It's invalid testing. Same thing for the hepatitis B vaccine. And then here's an example. The Informed Consent Action Network, they were getting very tired of the CDC saying, we don't know anything about autism. It's abominable. It's increased 4,000%. We're looking high, we're looking low, we can't find it. We only know one thing, it's not vaccines. Prominently posted on their website. So the high wire and this Informed Consent Action Network said, okay, we'll do a FOIA request, show us your studies. They didn't respond. So they had to sue them for studies. When they came up finally and got the studies, there were 14 studies. The 14 studies looked at one vaccine, MMR, and one ingredient, thimerosal. And that was their conclusion, that this couldn't be causing autism. So again, we don't know, but we're suspicious. So unfortunately, then pharma uses its billions of dollars to influence government, medical journals, try to get a study published that looks at autism. Now, you're not going to find any money. As a matter of fact, you're not going to find anybody to peer review your study either. So the science is tightly controlled by the pharmaceutical industry. There's no brakes on the train. Last is perhaps the worst. Human cell lines have been used since 1963. These are babies that are harvested alive, dissected. Their organs are put into cell lines. We're reassured that, don't worry, we've only used two. Well, there's at least five that are currently in use. There's a great website called A Voice for Truth that really documents this. They've actually named all the babies, which I think is very appropriate. So we have Ellie, David, Gianna, Jordan, and Bo. I want to do one more thing. I decided, okay, we know why this is happening now. The system is broken. The system doesn't have any brakes anymore. But I want to look at it from a Christian's perspective. So I wanted to do a view from eternity. So what we have to realize is science started with Christianity. All the great scientists, Kepler, Newton, Galileo, all came from a Christian viewpoint, and it was their Christian viewpoint that even made them think the way they did. We have creation, a God created us. The fall, we fell into sin. And when God created us, everything was good. When we fell, evil is introduced. We have redemption through Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. And he will return to complete his mission. In the meantime, we're here to occupy. 1 Corinthians 15, Jesus died, buried, rose again for our sins. John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, whosoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. I tell you one thing that's interesting. I'll bet there's people that are going to be saved because of COVID, right? I'm sure it's happening already. Because it makes them wake up. That's one thing we have to do. We have to wake up. We're sort of asleep. Here's what I want you to know. This verse, this sort of gives us the whole picture. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Nobody comes into the Father but by me. So there's three ways we can know something. We can know it because God told us. We read in the Bible. We can know it because we investigated it, science. Or we know it because we sort of look in our hearts, and that's what we feel, right? So we're either looking upward, looking outward, or looking inward. Science should acknowledge purposeful creation and this man's created the image of God. Morals should come from the biblical ethics derived from the Ten Commandments. These morals are absolute and unchanging. But what happens in our scientific world? I can tell you, because I was trained as a medical doctor, and they wipe this out of you. It's taken me years to undo my medical training. But basically, we get rid of God because we don't need him. We've explained everything through science. So this is what you get. We have science, which are facts, and you have morals, which are your values. We can't derive the morals from science. We just have to sort of come up with them. Science becomes scientism because that's the only source of knowledge. Scientism is basically, instead of the study of the physical world, it's the study of the physical world, and that's all there is. I mean, that sounds horrible, doesn't it? But that's what our science is founded on. So why would we expect any different outcome than what we just saw with COVID? This is my message. It's time for the church to be the church. We have to speak Jesus Christ, right? We have to speak Jesus Christ into science. How do we speak Jesus Christ into science? Only two things are needed. God created everything, and you're made in the image of God. There it is. We've saved science. But that is so hotly contended in the universities. We have to make our own universities. Public health is another problem that encourages groupthink. So as doctors, we're supposed to think this way. Well, we're saving millions of lives. Yeah, a few people died, but we're saving millions. So we stop forgetting that we're killing people. But interestingly enough, when you start with science, you find God. Science is screaming that there is a God. And we know from morals that we have a certain innate sense of right and wrong. Everybody has it. That's why you can argue about what's right and wrong. There is no neutral. Because I used to think, oh, we'll go to science, we'll just be neutral. That means instead of the way, the truth, and the life, we have the chaos, the lie, and the death. And it encourages confusion, hatred, and fear. And the only way there is control, since we can't appeal to God, we have to appeal to the state. So the state is always the mechanism of control. So that's why I'm saying it's up to us. We as Christians, but we're all under a spell. We really are. We're under a spell. And we have to break free from that spell and ask everything that we do, whether it's politics, education, medicine, science, is God in there? Are we framing this in a godly way? Put God back into all of our conversations. If we were going to do something practical, get rid of the 1986 law that protects the pharmaceutical companies from lawsuits. Let them sink and swim on their own product. If they've got a great product, we should have the right to sue them.
Dr. Mark Zumhagen, during the Illinois Family Institute's COVID-Con Forum, hosted by Families of Faith Church in Shanahan. Please support the work of the Illinois Family Institute. All donations are tax-deductible. To give, go to illinoisfamily.org and click Donate, or call 708-781-9328. And go to illinoisfamily.org to check out upcoming events and to sign on for IFI email updates. Tell your family and friends about Illinois Family Spotlight. Until next time, stay healthy, stay active, and God bless.
For more information about Illinois Family Spotlight, visit ifiaction.org. And to email questions and comments, do so at feedback@ifiaction.org.